Welcome to the Sufi Reverberations podcast, where each week, God willing, you will be able to hear a poem, a story, a meditation, and a musical interlude that give expression to one Sufi's perspective concerning the mystical dimension of Islam. My name is Anab Whitehouse, and I will be your host. Although I am not a sheikh, nonetheless, I did have the opportunity to spend 16 years in the company of a Sufi saint of the 20th century, and by the grace of God, was able to gain a few insights into the nature of the Sufi mystical path through that association. So, without further delay, let's proceed to the essential contents of this episode. This week's floretry selection is entitled, Freedom Came Today. Freedom came today for Iraqis. In a measured display of shock and awe that bestowed gratuitous wounds, unthankful souls will line the streets and greet us as compassionate heroes. Freedom came today to 600,000 innocents, which of course we deny as being far too high a figure based on data from programs that do not keep track of dead Iraqis. Freedom came today for poor Sami, who was looking for safety but found some kindness which blew him away. So let us play taps to mark when he became part of America's dream. Freedom came today for journalist Ali, thrown in jail for possibly 30 years since he didn't have the sense to write lies rather than truth about ruthlessly earned liberty. Freedom came today for Aisha, who was raped by those who set her free. This sort of special gallantry is, of course, an anomaly, since they normally stick with search and destroy. Freedom came today for unlucky Hassan, who was trying to see his family, but ended up naked in Abu Ghraib, with dogs growling devoid of shame at his dignity. Freedom came today for Rabia, who was caressed by white phosphorus, which made her feel all warm and fuzzy inside, right down to her small little bones. Surely her cup runneth over. Freedom came today for the masses who can, whenever they like, turn on faucets empty of water or switch on lights with no electricity to illumine tyrannies just in. Freedom came today in such neatly wrapped packages of hypocrisy and lies, democracy at its best, sold as a capital idea to peoples hungry for sovereignty. Freedom came today to greedy ones who, out of duty, lobbied their way to no-bid cost-plus contracts made in the secrecy of self-serving facts that enriched only non-Iraqis. Freedom came today in uncivil ways, one brother against another, locked in malignant enmity, set loose by U.S. magnanimity, oh beautiful, with rapacious eyes. Freedom came today through plans where bands of hired guns are inspired to kill sand dwellers, so wars will not wash up on homeland shores, and mangled lives can be sanitized through illusions. Freedom came today when night vision goggles found opportunity in their sight, and those who never saw it coming were liberated. Strange how we see their bodies, but not their hearts. Freedom might come today if the good old USA, despite a touch of delusion about its assumed place in God's space, would attend to the Ten Commandments and leave Iraq alone. Freedom might come today if knowledge took hold in citizen souls about democracy's decay through abuse of power which shackles conscience to mindless fears of created demons. The following short story is titled Confessions. A man was critically reflecting on the spiritual quality of his life. Because he was an honest man, he had tried to be unsparing in his self-assessment, and therefore he was becoming uncomfortable with what he was seeing in himself. There were a number of problematic themes that emerged during his ongoing autobiographical assessment. However, there was one behavioral pattern in particular which bothered him deeply. Years earlier, he had become interested in mysticism. He had been blessed with finding not only an authentic mystical guide, but someone who was, by the grace of God, a very pure servant of divinity. After a time, the former individual had become initiated by this teacher into the mystical way. Among other things, this seeker believed that initiation should christen the beginning of a deepening commitment to the principles of spirituality. Accordingly, to be initiated meant that a person should aspire to becoming more and more sincere about turning theory into practice, to not just read and talk about the mystical path, but to struggle to become what one was reading and talking about. Yet, there was the rub. The spiritual seeker felt like he was a hypocrite. There seemed to be a rather substantial discrepancy between what he professed and what he actually did. The man was so disturbed by what appeared to be an unavoidable conclusion with respect to the review which he had been conducting in relation to his life on the mystical path, he decided to go to a friend of his who was a traveler along the esoteric way and confess everything to him, hoping his friend might have some useful suggestions as to how to get his spiritual life straightened around. He began trying to summon up sufficient courage with which to approach his friend. Revealing one's faults to oneself is hard enough, but to disclose those secrets to another human being tends to be far more painful and embarrassing. Nonetheless, the man was determined to see this process of self-assessment and self-correction through until the bitter end. When he was ready, he went to his friend's house. His friend received him, as always, with affection and warmth. The rest of his friend's family was away at some community event, so the two were alone, and this made the man's task considerably easier, but still rather difficult. After a few false starts, the man finally got down to the business about which he had come. He said, "Probably, after you hear what I have to say, you no longer will wish to be my friend. But I can't live this way any longer. I can't live with my hypocrisy." His friend was surprised by the man's words. He always had considered his friend to be a good man, a devoted husband and father, someone to whom one always could go if one needed help with some task or other, an individual of serious purpose concerning life. Puzzled by his friend's comments, he said, "Why do you think you are a hypocrite? This is certainly not my impression of you." His friend smiled weakly at those words of encouragement and replied, "That is very much like you to say such kind things, but I tell you, I am a hypocrite." His friend waited for him to continue on with his self-critical account. Perhaps the whole matter could easily be dealt with once the specifics became known. The one who was in a confessional mood began to expand on his previous statements. "I'll try to give you some examples of what I have in mind. For instance, whenever I am with my spiritual guide, all I think about is how to become a better person. When I am with him, I constantly am feeling the nearness of God, and therefore I have no wish other than to remember and serve God. When I am with my teacher, I feel like the purpose of life is so clear, and I lose interest in everything else." The man sighed with frustration. His shoulders sank in despair. "But when I'm not in the presence of our spiritual guide, it often seems like the mystical way is completely forgotten by me. I become less dedicated to morally improving myself. I feel more distant from God. I become preoccupied with my wife, children, work, and the world. The purpose of life seems less clear, more elusive." As the man spoke these words, his friend shook his head in disbelief. Then his friend laughed and said, "Ha! I thought I was the only one who felt this way about things. Your confession is like a carbon copy of what I have been agonizing over for quite some time now, except you are more honest and courageous than me, because you have had the integrity to speak up about it, whereas I have been silent about such matters." He followed up on his own confession with a suggestion. "You know what we should do? We should both go to our teacher, tell him everything, place our fate in his forgiving hands, and pray that he doesn't disown us. His friend thought the suggestion was a good one. After all, they both had come this far, so they might as well go the full distance. Almost anything might be better than this deep sense of hypocrisy, which was gnawing away at them. They decided to strike while the iron of remorse was hot and go to the house of their teacher right away. Hopefully, the teacher would be home and not busy with someone or something else, as well as be willing to see them without their having made an appointment. They traveled in silence to their guide's residence. Each friend was anxious about what their immediate future might hold in store for them. Fortuitously, the teacher was home, not attending to some other responsibility, and he was prepared to receive them. The friends were ushered into the house and taken to the living room, where they each were invited to take seats. Once seated, the friends looked nervously at one another. They each were trying to communicate with their eyes and their eyebrows about who should be the confessional spokesperson. Finally, one of the friends took the bull by the horns and began relating their concerns to the teacher. When the first individual hesitated for a moment, the other friend continued on, picking up on the critical commentary where the other one had left off. They played confessional leapfrog in this way for a while. The teacher listened attentively, without interrupting, to everything the pair said. When the two seemed to wind down and exhaust what they had to say, he smiled at them. It seemed to be a smile of compassion, but the two were in such a state that they feared it might be the smile of an executioner ready to rid the world of moral refuse. They awaited their collective fate, hardly daring to breathe. They were not kept in suspense for long. Their guide continued to smile and said, "Being concerned with your spiritual condition the way you both are is a good sign because it indicates not only that you are serious about the mystical path, but that you are not content to merely talk about spirituality. You want to change your life so your character actively reflects the implementation of spiritual principles. I hope you both will continue to maintain this sort of sincere aspiration concerning the mystical path and continue, as well, to struggle through the ups and downs of this way. However, you both should know that if you were able to maintain the same level of spiritual intensity away from my presence as you do in my presence, the angels would line up so that they could shake your hand." Today's musical interlude is Down the Road. from high above the stage at Carnegie Hall, the Royal Albert Hall, and all venues in between, you are listening to the Sufi Reverberations podcast. This edition of Meditative Essays is called Exoteric. Historically, there has been a tendency by many people to try to set mysticism in opposition to those exoteric aspects of spirituality which are doctrinally and methodologically more accessible to the generality of people. The motivations for doing so are varied, but always in error. There is no conflict or contradiction between, on the one hand, the so-called outer or exoteric practices, values, and beliefs of spirituality, and, on the other hand, the inner or esoteric or mystical practices, values, and beliefs of spirituality. There are, however, important differences of emphasis, priorities, orientation, and perspective between the two dimensions of spirituality. Some people, for their own reasons, have tried to interpret these differences as evidence of a fundamental and irrevocable opposition between the outer or exoteric approach to spirituality and the inner or esoteric style of engaging spirituality. In other words, differences of, say, perspective have been transformed into irreconcilable antagonisms, and these manufactured antagonisms have, in turn, been escalated into polarized claims that only one of the two broad streams give expressions to the truth. There are those who have tried to maintain that the esoteric or mystical dimension is nothing but a den of iniquity, which is leading people to spiritual destruction. Simultaneously, there are others who attempt to argue that the exoteric or outer dimension is nothing but an antiquated, fossilized museum of empty rituals and institutionalized ignorance. Both of the foregoing positions are, in general, incorrect. Nonetheless, there may be particular instances in which there is an element of truth to what each position is claiming. More specifically, there are, in fact, some who claim to be mystics who operate on the basis of certain practices, beliefs, and values which distort truth and lead its adherents away from God. Therefore, these brands of quote-unquote mysticism have the all-too-real potential for seducing individuals to their own spiritual destruction. Similarly, there are, in fact, some people who follow an exoteric path which has been reduced to little more than a series of empty rituals to which one pays lip service. This kind of exotericism is steeped in ignorance and frequently degenerates into various institutionalized forms whose primary function seems to be to transmit such ignorance and emptiness from one generation to the next. Notwithstanding the foregoing comments, exotericism and esotericism should have a loving, caring, reciprocal relationship with one another. They should be like two friends who have many features in common, but nonetheless lead somewhat different lives as a result of variations in interests, experiences, inclination, goals, and so on. For instance, both friends may agree the defining essence of the human being is spiritual in nature. On the other hand, they may be committed to different perspectives concerning the precise character of that spiritual nature and what implications such nature has for issues of identity and spiritual capacity. One friend may be interested in seeking to attain heaven and avoid hell. This person arranges his or her life accordingly. The other friend may be preoccupied with seeking and realizing divine love, and consequently de-emphasizes the importance of heaven and hell as sources of motivation in one's life, but without denying their reality. This individual also organizes her or his life in a way which reflects the life goal. One friend may restrict herself or himself to only certain practices of worship and remembrance of God. These practices are the ones which that person finds most meaningful and useful. These practices are the ones with which the individual is happy and content. These practices are the ones with which the individual feels most comfortable and which are most consonant with his or her life. The other friend enjoys the modalities of worship and remembrance to which her or his friend is committed. However, this friend has found other practices which also are meaningful and of practical value. These additional practices bring happiness and contentment as well. This friend also feels comfortable with these other modes of worship and finds them quite consonant with her or his life. Moreover, this friend doesn't feel compelled to choose one set of practices over the other, but rather she or he uses them in complementary fashion. One friend may feel no need to seek out a guide to assist one in journeying towards God. This friend may feel sufficient guidance already exists in the form of sacred texts or commentaries and spends her or his time studying such materials. The other friend may want to work in close association with a guide in order to understand how sacred texts can be given expression in living form. This friend may feel the need to seek out help to learn how to actively incorporate different levels of meanings and principles of sacred texts into one's day-to-day life. This person also may realize that the more deeply she or he delves into such matters, the process is fraught with possible dangers involving the capacity of the ego to distort and bias understanding. Consequently, this friend does not feel safe in pursuing these issues without benefit of consultative expertise from an active practitioner and not just a theoretician. One friend may not be very adventuresome and may feel most comfortable staying within certain parameters of experience. The other friend may be more adventuresome and want to see what is possible in the way of experience, and yet still be within the realms of permissibility. This is a matter of temperament and inclination, nothing more. One friend may have a need to experience things directly. This friend may also want to be certain about the nature of such experiences and their meanings. The other friend may not be as interested in direct experience as his or her friend is content with indirect modalities of experience. In addition, this friend may have no need to seek certainty concerning the nature of those experiences and their meanings. One friend may be prepared to wait until the next life to realize the truth about identity, reality, and so on. The other friend may not be so inclined to wait, and instead, this friend may want to determine what can be known in this life. One friend may wish to use his or her mind in the most competent manner possible in order to worship God. However, this friend may have no interest in learning how to use other potential instruments within the human being in order to enhance the range and intensity of one's manner of worshiping God. The other friend may not be satisfied with just developing the mind as an instrument of worshiping God. This friend may wish to explore and develop other modalities of spirituality as well. One friend may feel that X hours of worship per day or week is all she or he can handle. The other friend may want to devote X plus Y hours per day or week towards worship. One friend may find certain teachings difficult to understand, in addition, may have no interest in working at coming to an understanding of those teachings. The other friend also may find the same teachings difficult to understand, but unlike her or his friend, is willing to struggle towards trying to understand such teachings. One friend may like the processes of meditation and contemplation. The other friend may not like those processes. One friend may have something inexplicable inside her or him, which is constantly urging the individual onward in pursuit of various dimensions of spirituality. This friend genuinely may be puzzled why her or his friend doesn't seem to feel the same urge. The other friend does not necessarily feel a constant urge to probe further into spirituality. This friend genuinely may be puzzled about why, to varying degrees, his or her friend does seem to be driven spiritually. In all of the foregoing considerations, exotericism and esotericism are not in conflict with one another. They are not in opposition to one another. The fact of the matter is, one merely has two people with differences in their respective modes of engaging spirituality. The spiritual interests, goals, inclinations, degrees of commitment, perspectives, priorities, and needs of the two friends are different. These differences do not translate into forcing one to conclude only one of the two ways can be true. These differences are reflections of intention or the exercise of free will in relation to the spectrum of possibilities to which spirituality gives expression. Both of these friends believe in truth and spiritual discipline. Both friends orient their lives through spiritual values. Both of these friends are drawn, in one way or another, to the realm of spiritual transcendence. Both friends, each in his or her own way, wish to actively seek submission to divinity. Both friends derive their sense of purpose, meaning, and identity from pursuing spirituality according to their interests and inclinations and abilities. Both friends believe in spiritual commitment and in honoring that commitment. The hearts of both friends are inclined towards and attracted by qualities of generosity, kindness, forbearance, forgiveness, and love. Both friends make mistakes and try to correct and atone for those mistakes. The exoteric stream of spirituality is the one which almost all of us start with in life. There is much to explore, understand, implement, and appreciate within this stream. The esoteric stream of spirituality is one which not everyone seeks out. However, generally speaking, the only way of getting to it is by swimming in the exoteric stream. These streams are not separate streams. They are expressions of a much larger body of water, like mighty rivers which flow in the ocean. These streams move through one another in subtle and complex ways. Eddies and vortices are shaped and formed by the intertwining of dimensions from both streams. We are those eddies and vortices. Each of us has the responsibility of seeking to worship and remember God in the way one believes God feels is most appropriate for the individual. Each of us has the responsibility for deciding to what extent one will pursue trying to realize one's essential capacity and identity. Each of us has the responsibility for deciding how far to pursue the different dimensions of spirituality. We ought to do all we can to be supportive of and encouraging to and empathetic with others who are struggling with these choices and decisions. In the end, however, it is God, not us, who will judge the degree of sincerity in our respective attempts to discharge our responsibilities according to our capacities to do so. You have been listening to the Sufi Reverberations podcast. I hope you will join me next week for a new episode of this program. May peace be your companion.